Mr. Rose Riwan, where were you born, please?
I was born in Stone, Staffordshire.
Which year was this?
In 1921.
Can you tell me something about your family background, what your father did for a living and so on, please?
My father was a carpenter. I was one of 11 children.
Were you the eldest or the youngest?
No, I was about the sixth.
Where did you go to school? In Stone?
In Stone, yes. St. Michael's Church School, Stone.
How old were you when you finished there?
I finished at 14.
In 35?
Yes.
What was life like in Stone before the Second World War?
Well, then, it was a real old-fashioned market town. Today, of course, totally different. But in those days, of horse and carts instead of lorries and cars.
Was it a good life or not?
A difficult life. Being one of a large family. And there was much unemployment at that time. My father was out of work when I left school and didn't get work until, I believe, 1938, when they started to develop aerodromes and that sort of thing.
What did happen to you on leaving school?
I worked for a local company in the engineering section, of which was mainly a timber and associated goods area, starting from the felling of trees and all the things that come from that, with contracts to all the various people, like what was then the General Post Office and national companies. And my job was working on cranes and all types of saws and everything with it that went along in that industry.
Did you join any organisation like TA before the war?
Yes, I did. In January 1938, I joined the Royal Engineers, TA, which was a squadron which was based in Stone.
Why did you decide to join the Territorial?
Well, my elder brother was in the Territorial Army, and he encouraged me to join, and I found it quite enjoyable, inasmuch as 12 months after, January 39, I joined the regular army.
Did you join because of the pay, or did you join because of the international situation?
I joined, actually, at that time, the company who I worked for found themselves in difficulties and eventually closed down. And there was no other sort of work in the area of Stone, that is, and along with the Palomine mine, and having talked to my parents, I decided to join the army.
So you became a regular?
I did.
How did you go about joining up?
Via the recruiting office in Hanley, which is Stoke-on-Trent. And rather hilarious, really, because there was a man who lived in the street where I lived, and he was in a Scottish regiment, and he came on leave in all his finery, his kilts. He used to wear a kilt and a busby type hat, and I wanted to be in a Scottish regiment. And when I went to the recruiting office, I said I would like to join the Seaforth Highlanders. And when it came to actually joining, I got this rail warrant to go to Seaforth, which of course is in Liverpool. And I finished up with the King's Regiment. And being young and silly, I never sort of queried it at all. And but I finished up at Seaforth Barracks in Liverpool, and with the King's Regiment.
But you'd already spent some time as a sapper. As a sapper.
Oh yes.
What training had you got in the engineers?
The unit in Goole was virtually one of the first units to deal with searchlights.
The unit in Stone, you mean?
The unit in Stone was the first to deal with searchlights, and it was a searchlight unit. And we were taught how to set the searchlight up using the sun and that sort of thing. All a bit vague now, that. But we were called up in August 1938, and we were sent to Runcorn, and we were there for 3 weeks before we were stood down again. But at that time we said we were alerted in case of war. But of course, it didn't come for 12 months after that.
What was the number of the searchlight unit you were in?
I couldn't tell you now. I couldn't tell you the number of the squadron now.
What terms had you joined up in the regular army on? What terms?
Well, the terms initially were that... It was called the Supplementary Reserve. You enlisted and you served 6 months. At the end of 6 months, you were given the choice if you wished to continue or you could finish. But following the 6 months, I finished in July the 21st. And I got 6 weeks' leave. But during those 6 weeks, of course, I was recalled on the 30th of August. The little telegram boy with the box hat and that arrived, and I was working in the garden. And he said, "Are you Mr. Rose?" "Yes, I've got a telegram for you." And I was called back. And then from then on, as you well know, the war started on September the 3rd, and I served until 1946, and I was demobbed then in 1946.
So you spent your first 6 months in Seaforth?
Seaforth Barracks, yes, from January to July.
What was that like?
Never easy. Rather harsh in those days, being in the army. And you were dealing with people, actually, who'd served in the First World War. And it was a pretty difficult time. But by the time the 6 months was up, you'd got used to the harsh discipline. And I personally liked it at the end of 6 months.
Why?
I liked the life. It was a completely new life to me. And basically, one of the things, you were getting clothed well, you were getting fed well. And that was something, as a young person, from the age of 14, it was difficult to know when you were going to get a reasonably good meal.
Is Seaforth Barracks in the Wirral or in Liverpool?
No, it's in Liverpool. It's in the Bootle, near the Bootle area. All gone now, of course. It's all industrial estate.
Any incidents that happened to you in that six-month period?
The one that I can bring to mind is it was my first experience with the IRA. They threw a bomb through the gym window, and a chap named Sergeant Rawcliffe, he picked this bomb up and dropped it into a fire bucket, a bucket of water. And I think, if my memory serves me right, he got some decoration for it. But that was my introduction to the activities of the IRA.
Did you see him do it?
No, I didn't see him do it, no. No. But it wasn't a Seaforth barracks, not so very big. And it was all a buzz in the barracks of what he'd done.
How did they know it was the IRA?
I don't know. I think it was not accepted that it was the IRA, who were active, I think, at that time. And I think a lot of it sort of associated with an area of Liverpool.
What was the reaction of civilians to soldiers in the area?
I don't think, by and large, that they were too involved, but were inclined to look down on you as a soldier.
Why was that?
I don't know. You'll perhaps know that as a young soldier, perhaps lots of us did silly things that we shouldn't have done, and didn't encourage civilians to sort of take to you. But that was my general feeling, that you were looked down on.
What sort of silly things are you referring to?
Well, if you, what money you had, which wasn't much, but then, with beer, say, tuppence a pint, and you drank two or three pints of beer as a young person, and you did silly things.
Did you do that?
I'm sure I did. And, of course, you were always inclined to go out, say, a dozen, 20 of you at a time, and perhaps the same today. There was upset. Somebody would say the wrong thing at the wrong time and cause problems, and you would go to the aid of the one that was getting into trouble and that sort of thing.
When Chamberlain declared war on Germany, what were your feelings about that?
There was a mixture, I think. I was into Seaforth Barracks, it was Sunday, and I was into Seaforth Barracks when we learned that war had been declared. And it was sort of a mixture of exhilaration. You felt at last you were going to do something which you'd join the army to do. And perhaps a bit of bewilderment. And the general buzz of what went on at that time. And what would happen to us, where would we be going, and all that sort of thing.
Have you been in a battalion?
No. When the war broke out, within a month, I'd been transferred to the 5th Battalion, which was Liverpool's territorial battalion. Quite a few of us were transferred into the 5th Battalion of the King's Regiment. I think to give them sort of some experience, as much as you can say 6 months was experience, to give them 6 months soldiers with some experience anyway.
Where did you join this battalion?
It was in Liverpool, and the first place I remember staying was Highton. And that was a partially completed housing estate, and we were moved into these empty properties. And we were in Highton for some time. Later on, the regiment did move to Formby. We spent some time in Formby, and then we moved generally all around the country.
Were most of the people in the battalion from Liverpool?
Yes, they were. Yes.
How did you get on with them?
Well, there was a lot of ribald commenced because all the NCOs, officers and NCOs, who were in the Tay at that time, retained their ranks. And you were dealing with people. One of them came to Goole, actually, and you mentioned him, Smith. He was a sergeant, and they really didn't know half as much as what you knew, say, about, which the Bren Gun was pretty new then, and that stripping the Bren Gun down, that sort of thing. And we found ourselves teaching NCOs about small arms, stripping Bren Guns and 2-inch and 3-inch mortars, that sort of thing. And you always felt it a bit unfair that they were the NCOs. And I was private at that time. It just didn't seem sort of fair. So there was always that barrier between you. You know, you're sort of a TA soldier and I was a regular soldier, that sort of thing.
What do you remember happening next to you? Any incidents?
No, not really. We moved then generally all over the place. Never stopping. Like, we came to Goole in 1942. We stopped in Goole for about 6 months. And then we moved on to Knaresborough. Then we went to Hornsey. Why they kept moving us about like this, I could never figure out.
So you were mostly in Yorkshire then?
Not all the time, no. We were in Aldershot, Pevensey near Eastbourne, Felixstowe, Moulton in the Marsh, Scotland, Lossiemouth. We went all over the place. Some of them I can't even remember. We moved that many times.
Did you go on coastal defence?
Oh, yes. Yeah. An incident in Felixstowe when a chap named Fowkes, Private Fowkes, was there. We used to take it in turns at manning a Bren Gun on the tripod. And he shot a Dornier down. A Dornier, German bomber. And he got charged for firing without permission. That sort of thing, yeah. I can remember.
Did you see him do it?
Pardon?
Did you see him do it?
I saw him do it, yeah. Yes, we were all around and we said, it's here, it's here. And we saw it come down.
Was this at night or during the day?
Pardon?
At night or daytime?
Daytime. During the day. And he got charged for firing without permission. Yeah. I think he got a pat on the back at the end of the day from the CO. But I can remember also patrolling the beaches around Pevensey Bay, with a pickaxe shaft. I think we'll repel them Germans okay with these.
Did you not have a rifle?
At that time, no. Because I think that many had been lost at Dunkirk, or in that in that period of Dunkirk. There must have been thousands of rifles and that abandoned or lost, whatever. And yes, sir, quite a long time just carrying a pick handle.
Carry on.
Now, as an older person, I'm convinced that we went into the war too quick, because I don't think we were ready for it. I think perhaps if we'd have kept away for about 12 months while we really got ready, and that pertained, I think, to everything, to aircraft, shipping, naval ships. I really think we went in too quick, and as I say, an older person, I spent many, many hours thinking, am I right in saying that? That I think we went in just too quick.
Did you think at that time the Germans would invade?
I was convinced they would. I was convinced they would invade us. What? Following Dunkirk, of course.
What at that time did you think would happen once they did invade?
Well, I think listening, of course, to Winston Churchill, and if he says we will fight them on the beaches, in the streets, etc., etc., I thought that's what we would be doing. But of course, it never happened.
Did you see anything of other German aircraft at this time?
Oh, yes, yeah, I saw in my time in the south as well, apart from the doodle bombs, nearly all the other aircraft, Messerschmitts and Heinkels, and you could tell them by the noise of the engines even what was coming. So yeah, all sorts of German aircraft.
You mean you could tell different German aircraft
by the sound? By the sound of them. Mm.
Did you have any narrow escapes from air attack in England?
No, not really, no.
What was morale in the unit like in the 5th Kings during all these moves around the country?
It was never perfect, because of the bombing of Liverpool, serious bombing of Liverpool, particularly in May 1941, when members of the regiment, they were concerned about what was happening to their families in Liverpool. And there was a lot of absent without leave. It wasn't desertion, but they were just going home to find out what was happening to families. And lots of them, of course, lost their families. So there was always that difficulty in the King's Regiment.
Did the bombing of Liverpool make them want to retaliate against the enemy?
Of course it did. Yeah, the natural feeling was. All the words were said about the Germans at that time, and gave them that determination to go on and do what they had to do.
What were the officers like in your battalion?
I remember the sergeant major better than the officers. But the officers that were with us, except for one or two of them, didn't come on D-Day. They were replaced with other officers. And one of them was an outstanding officer, and I always said that Sword Beach would have fallen to pieces had it not been for this one officer. And his superior officer disappeared into a bunker that we'd captured and just refused to come out. And therefore, this Lieutenant Hughes, he stood head and shoulders above anyone in settling things down on the beach. That's another story, of course, because leading up to that, our final place was to have Ant near Portsmouth.
Before we go on to the move to Normandy, where did this Lieutenant Hughes come from then?
I believe he was from Bolton. He was a Bolton chap.
Was he a regular or a territorial?
No, I think he was a regular officer. He'd been posted in from somewhere. But he was the one officer that I really admired. And I can see him now. And encouraging people to do what they'd got to do. And he was stood up there at that time. As I say, we're going in front of ourselves a little. I can judge him from then on. He was an outstanding person.
Why do you remember the Sergeant Major so much?
Well, one in particular was RSM Forster, and I'll never forget that man. He was the old school type, and he was like your god. Whatever he told you to do, you knew you had to do it immediately, or he would take action against you. There was him and a company sergeant major named Gardner, who was the company sergeant major of A Company of 5th Kings. But these people didn't go into action with you, because they'd been in the 1418 war, and of course were really too old, because they'd been there in the region 45-50, too old to go into action.
What did the soldiers think of the RSM and CSM Gardner?
Well, I think at the end of the day, you respected them, because they made you who you were, to accept discipline and do things to the best of your abilities. And I think that to be admired. But at the outset, you thought they were pretty brutal. You know.
Did you get punished by them?
Yes, several times. Confined to barracks and all the things that went with that.
What had you done wrong?
Just little things. Perhaps answering back when you shouldn't have done. Or when you did answer back, saying the wrong things. That sort of thing.
What did you tend to answer back about?
Sometimes about the food, say. And you'd get into an exchange of words, and you regretted that virtually immediately. But it was part of the learning process.
Mr. Rose, Reel 2. So, wasn't the food any good?